Expanding Mind with Eric Davis, Thursdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of Expanding Mind. I'm your host, Eric Davis, and we are going to continue our exploration into the cultures of consciousness. One of the most fun experiences I've had, or really opportunities I've had to explore the edge of the mind and the culture of consciousness was many years spent flogging through the terminal fun of Burning Man. And I first went to Burning Man in 1994, and it was wonderful in retrospect because I had no idea what I was doing. I was on a listserv, Fringeware Review, and I was going to be traveling in Nevada and California, and I got this news about this quote-unquote arts festival, burning something, whatever. So that was all the information I was going on when I went out there with my girlfriend at the time. And so we, you know, followed the instructions into the middle of nowhere and pulled off the road, and there was this one kind of Mad Max-looking character sitting by a small little dusty car, and he was covered with dust and had goggles and whatever, and then he took our $20 or $40, I can't quite remember, and pointed to a distant mountain and said, see that mountain? Drive 10 miles and make a right. And so that's how we found this place way back when. And it was really a remarkable experience for somebody like me who's interested in not just unusual states of mind and unusual artistic activities, but also the cultures that grow around them, the kind of anthropology of consciousness, you might say, because Burning Man was kind of a petri dish where all of these various somewhat contradictory elements, post-punk nihilism, Bay Area neo-paganism, performance art, extreme behavior, madness, utopian hope, utter pessimism got thrown together and bubbled and boiled away year after year and changed and transformed and got reconstructed and really evolved. It really was like, is like a petri dish. So it was a wonderful thing to be able to watch that almost every summer from that first year. But one thing that became clear for me all along, because I'm always interested in religious and spiritual activity and behavior, is that there was a very peculiar kind of religious and spiritual aspect of Burning Man, but it was hard to locate. I mean, some things were obvious. There were obvious ritual elements, and back in the day there was even, you know, spiral dances that were a kind of classic form of pagan ritual, well known to Bay Area folks in those zones. But at the same time, there was something deeper and more profound, but it was always very elusive. In fact, in many ways, the event and the participants resisted sort of putting on an explicitly religious or spiritual layer. And so it's always been a fascinating thing for me to track, and I'm really, really happy that my friend Lee Gilmore has just put out a book, Theater in a Crowded Fire, that looks explicitly at ritual and spirituality at Burning Man. Lee is a scholar in religious studies as well as a longtime burner. And in addition to thinking hard about the ritual and spiritual aspects of the event and what it means in terms of religion and spirituality, she's also done the best job so far that I've seen in any Burning Man literature of just providing data about participants, about their experiences, about the event. And in an event like this where there's so much going on, there's so many different points of view, so many different communities claiming different agendas, it's really important to have really strong ethnographic data if you're going to make any claims about what this event means to the people who are going to it and indeed who are putting it on. But before we get to Lee, I just wanted to bring on our co-host Maja, esoteric librarian. And one of the things that thinking about Burning Man, and I'm sure one of the things we'll talk about today, is this whole question of what is religion. You might look at something and say, oh, look, that looks like a religious behavior, and you ask the people, and they say, no, there's nothing religious about this at all. And then you're like, well, what is it? What is the point of using that word? And I'm, as the esoteric librarian, I'm sure you have something to say on this matter, Maja. So give it a whirl. What is religion?
Well, I think about it a lot, Eric, and I think that when you study any kind of comparative religious study, you have to first of all say, okay, well, what's the denominator? What makes it a religion? And most people in their minds, they think it has to be some huge organized structure that is kind of, you know, centered around a scripture or something written down. And I think that's a misconception that comes from, if you look up the etymology, there's two different ones that you'll find, and one of them comes from relegere, which means to reread over and over. So there was like all of the kind of church folks took that to mean that it was about reading a scripture, and that's what made a religion. But if you look into the esoteric etymology, there's a lot of ancient scholars that say it comes from a word called relegare, which means to bind together or to bind fast, to like hold it. It's like a bond that exists between humans and gods. And I really like that definition because one of my favorite quotes from the Bible is a passage from Matthew. And it says, "For where two or three come together in my name, there am I with them." And so I kind of have a looser idea of what religion is and that it's more about intention in an organized community. So if you have something like Burning Man, and it's a bunch of people that are all getting together under the same auspice of like sharing their souls or sharing their spirit, I think that, you know, what you would call God or higher consciousness will be there with them under that kind of definition. So for me, I think religion is where communities get together with an intention of sharing their consciousness and sharing their spirit.
Well, that sounds like a great working definition to embark on our discussion. I'd like to welcome Lee onto the show. Lee, thanks for joining us here on Expanding Mind.
Am I
Hello?
Here? Hello, I think I'm here.
You are.
Yay, I like being here.
Excellent. And where are you calling from?
I am calling from a little office at Cal State Northridge down in Los Angeles.
That's where they had the big shake not so long ago.
Well, it was a while ago, actually. That was 90. I forget what it was, but yes. But they still
doesn't
very much remembered here.
In the world of shakers, that doesn't seem very long.
I suppose.
So congratulations on your book. I understand you've been working on it for a long time. Tell me a little bit about the length of time you've been working on this project.
Quite a long time, actually. I haven't been going to Burning Man quite as long as you have. I started going in 1996. Really, you know, I started doing my research the minute I walked onto the playa and started looking around, you know, at the symbol and ritual and play and just sort of creativity that people embark on with culture in that space. And it was about 3 years later when I had just started my PhD, and my advisor at the time said, you know, you really should think about doing your dissertation on Burning Man. This was at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. And being a good little graduate student, I wasn't one to, you know, question my advisor. So at that point, I got a little bit more serious about what I was doing. Yeah?
Well, you're lucky you had an advisor who saw the opportunity there. I mean, there must have been I can imagine that for an institution like GTU, a theological seminary, that there would be some resistance to the idea that this might be an appropriate dissertation topic.
Well, I suppose there was a little bit, but I'm certainly very, you know, I picked my advisor carefully. He picked me carefully. I mean, it was clear, you know, that we would be able to work well together and that we had, you know, certain interests in common. And believe it or not, it was actually fairly well received, and there was one other person who did a dissertation on Burning Man just before me. He did a much more theological take than I did. So you know, in a way, thinking about the conversation that you guys started off with in terms of what defines religion, I think that right there is a little bit of a case study to show that certainly, you know, at a collection of seminaries in Berkeley, which is what the GTU is, there was actually a lot of openness and a lot of interest in my doing a project on Burning Man. So I think that sort of indicates that there's, even what we think of as religious institutions, you know, often have a lot more flexibility and have a lot more, you know, this is the Progressive Radio Network, right? So have a certain, you know, progressive bent that people don't necessarily assume. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. That's wonderful. So what drew you to Burning Man in the first place? What were the circumstances that drew you out there?
Oh, my story. I had started hearing about it living in San Francisco in the 90s, probably about the time that you started going in 94. I actually remember the first time I heard about it, I was, working at a little ad agency in San Francisco, and there was one other, I think I can use the word freak on your program, that worked in the office, and so we sort of bonded. Turns out to have been a guy named Adrian Roberts, who later edited a newspaper at Burning Man called Piss Clear. We worked together, and he happened to be going to Burning Man and described it as a big rave in the desert that he thought was going to be kind of lame, but he was going anyway. And then he came back and something had happened. He had had a really remarkable transformative experience. And finally, about a couple years later, some friends of mine sort of convinced me that it was my turn to check it out. So I went out, camped with a group called Safari Camp my first year in 96, watched them shoot little tanks of propane into the air and shoot them down in a skeet chute and large 20-gallon tanks of propane. So the entire experience was eye-opening and challenging. That particular group really sort of forced me to confront some fears around guns, and within a couple of days, I was out there shooting propane myself, and didn't know if I would be coming back the following year, but also kind of like your story, I got onto an email list. I got onto the early incarnation of the Burning Man email list, before we had, the web or Facebook or any of that stuff. It was all email lists. Kind of got completely hooked at that point by meeting people off the playa and connecting there almost as much, if not more, than I had connected on the playa. So it's a bit of a silly story. I tell it in a little more depth in the book. But basically, it was friendships and community that kept me going back over and over again. So it shouldn't have surprised me that when I actually started doing interviews, that was one of the themes that a lot of other people referenced as well, in terms of what it was about Burning Man that was most significant for them, and that also helped them, find that thread of transformation. So
now, when you approach this, let's just take the question of transformation. That's one of the more elevated claims you can make about Burning Man, is whether it's a party or a ritual or some new cultural creation or whatever it is, it's certainly the case that for many, many people, they come back changed in some way, that they'll use a language of transformation, whether it's spiritual or just I've discovered a new community or a new way of being in the world, or I've come home, or whatever ways they frame it. So if you're trying to approach that as a scholar and as an observer and as someone interested in cultural dynamics, is it what are the problems and the benefits for using a religious approach, for using an approach that's aware of religious behavior, of ritual behavior through time? Is there some distortion that's entered in there? I mean, what does it mean to introduce these religious questions specifically to an event as open-ended and multifaceted and contradictory as Burning Man?
I think the event itself sort of begs someone to ask those questions in the way that people clearly are playing with ritual and symbol, parodying religion, but also then at the same time taking it quite seriously and sort of looking at both sides of that coin. So people are doing, what we call, for lack of a better word, religion and ritual at Burning Man. So obviously then, given my own interests, that's the piece that I've gravitated towards terms of sort of applying that theological, or I'm sorry, not that a particular scholarly lens, not a theological lens, but a scholarly lens. And somebody's calling.
For folks who haven't been to Burning Man or just have a slight sense of it, can you just give some example of both an event or a ritual or a structure or something where religion is being seriously parodied and one where it's very obviously intentional and serious in its purview?
the most obvious examples that come to mind then are the burn, which isn't necessarily, which is perhaps less religious than many of the other rituals, although as the central event, you kind of can't ignore it. But there's also the temples. And, you know, I feel like I want to sort of address the serious examples before I get to the parody, because I think that explains what's going on a little bit more. The temples are a structure, a series of structures that are constructed and then burned annually every year at the event, where people are invited to inscribe the walls with memories, and they're specifically places for remembering the dead and for mourning those who have passed. So people who go to those spaces find them to be places that invite them to, you know, think introspectively, to meditate on, you know, their own mortality, as well as mourning the loss of those who have gone before. And then when the structure burns, the idea is that these emotions then get carried up, you know, in dust and smoke and as an offering. So that's one of the examples that's maybe a little more obviously serious. Honestly, one of the examples that comes right to mind was, in terms of parodying, was I just sat down and reread the essay that you wrote for a book I co-edited a few years ago called Afterburn, Reflections on Burning Man, which was an earlier collection of mostly academic essays about Burning Man, and was remembering the story that you told about sitting in full lotus meditation wearing duck flippers and goggles and then being knocked over by a pirate and having in that moment a fairly powerful encounter. So you in that story are, I think, a great example of balancing a serious intent to meditate for 45 minutes while at the same time being very playful about the way that you did so, you know, going out there looking like Donald Duck. So I think a lot of the parodies tend to be these sort of individual statements like that. I'm also remember there's a phone booth where you're invited to talk to God. I've seen, you know, Reiki and yoga lessons, Kabbalah lessons, the Motel 666, which was a theme camp. I can go on and on and on, you know, with various stories and examples. It's sort of, you know, a part of the challenge of writing the book was really trying to figure out what gets left on the cutting room floor.
Well, one of the wonderful things I think about the parody element is that, you know, on the one hand, there's things that are just sort of obviously blasphemous or more mockery, and some of it's funny and some of it's kind of tasteless and some of it's both. But that there's really something deeper and more profound going on there that, at least in some cases, which is that on the one hand, as you say, it's obvious that there is a religious and spiritual dimension for many, many people who go there, even just structurally in terms of the ritual, and we can talk more about some of your, you know, strong ideas about pilgrimage and how that functions. But at the same time, there's this real reticence because of the place where we are in society, because of postmodernity, because of all of the horrible you know, records of not only mainstream religions, but at this point even New Age spirituality is really kind of repulsive to a lot of people, and they're really sick of a lot of it. So that there's this impulse to simultaneously create a space for spiritual experience, for community, for ritual, for collective memory, and at the same time to pull the rug out from under any tendency to get overly serious and overly attached to any particular language or idea about what that spirituality means. So it's sort of like a creative invocation of nihilism. Rather than nihilism being like, oh, there's no meaning, who cares, there's no point in spirituality, we're all just going to die, let's just party until we drop. But
right.
Instead it's like, wait, we can pull the rug out from under anything. We can make fun of anything, including certainly ourselves, and yet we continue to invest in the possibility of having transformative experience with others in magical ways, in ways with great subtlety sometimes. And it's that balance that I don't really see in many other places in our society. I mean, there's the churches of genius, there's, you know, little places that
right.
have some of that, but it's just a whole other level at Burning Man.
Right. So there's a couple different things that I think are going on there. And one, you know, is an idea that we call the carnivalesque, right? You know, in a way, although Burning Man is a fantastic postmodern example of all of these cultural trends, this has been going on forever. People in cultures often create different ways to parody what is normal, right? To take what is normative, to take what is the authority, and turn it upside down temporarily, right? In events like carnivals and in specific rituals that are intended to, you know, tweak with the norm and sort of poke fun, you know, at the emperor having no clothes. So that impulse to sort of critique religion and religious structure through parody is something that's actually older than Burning Man, and it's showing up here in a new way. So I think that sometimes when people get confused, I guess, or see Burning Man as only a party, you know, for me, I want to encourage people to sort of step back and look at the fact that that's kind of part of the package deal with religion and culture, is that you have to be able to make fun of it at a certain point, and that creates the meaning in being able to critique the authority and both gives what is authoritative more central power, while at the same time allowing those who are on the bottom to play with it. You know
well,
what I'm saying?
It's totally true, and I think that an important thing, people critique Burning Man for not being religious or spiritual by looking at how hedonistic everybody is and jokey everybody is. But you look at churches, if you look at what is traditionally considered religion, you look at a church and how many people in the church that are going to the service are like super duper having a religious experience or are like totally into it or having like a feeling of connection of God. I mean, most of them are there either because they think they have to be or because their mom is making them or they're there for like a community thing. There's all kinds of different reasons why people are at churches. Like I would not say that you could critique Burning Man for people being there for, you know, that not everyone is there for a religious experience. But like
sure.
You said, having that ability to have that kind of saturnine sense of humor about it and that ability to kind of look at themselves in that way while they're there undergoing the moment, that it does. I think it harkens back to like shamans being gestures, like, and making fun of themselves while they
right.
were doing the religious ritual and the religious acts. Like, it's super shamanistic in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's this extent to which the thread just went out because I got fascinated in what you were saying.
Well, one thing that Maja said made me think of is that, and Barbara Ehrenreich talks about this, is that in the Middle Ages it was common for certain feast days to actually dance in church.
Mm.
We know now we think of churches. You go into a medieval cathedral and you're like, oh my God, it's so stately. We're all like monks and like settling down and fearing God. And actually, there's a carnivalesque element even it's really at the heart of Christianity. Admittedly, more obviously earlier on, except you'll still see that in Catholic countries around Mardi Gras. So there's that whole carnivalesque
right.
element as sort of a kind of it's sort of like the role that the court jester had in the medieval court, where it's sort of part of the court, but also kind of making fun of the court. And in a way, carnival is like that. It's part of the religion, but it's also a space where especially people who are normally oppressed
right.
in the society are able to play with power and subvert and invert all these relationships. So it really is in the heart of
Exactly. And I just remember,
well.
So the point that I now have returned to is that, again, I kind of returned to, I spent, you know, 6-7 years hanging out with seminarians in Berkeley. So my particular view of Christianity was definitely skewed by that. You know, I'm much more familiar with progressive Christians. Spent several years, you know, reacquainting myself with the Episcopal Church and getting to know people who were, you know, training for the clergy and also ordained. And they have a particularly unique sense of humor about their work. You know, so I think that a lot of, certainly what people are, part of what people are attracted to in Burning Man when they are attracted to its ritual and spiritual elements is the way in which those do seem to exist outside of traditional religious structures. And yet part of what I'm trying to do in this book is to show how those religious structures themselves are much looser than I think we tend to assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that part of the beauty of Burning Man then shows how people can take some of those same impulses and displace them onto other kinds of structures that parallel religion, and sort of show the ways in which religion itself is not really a set of fixed institutions and scripts, you know, and scriptures, even though we tend to assume that's what they are, that that itself is a dialectic process, and people are constantly critiquing that and reinventing that and having to ask themselves questions about what religion and spirituality means, both from inside and outside.
Well, we've been using these terms, religion and spirituality, and there's a chapter in your book when you use that phrase, spiritual but not religious, which is sort of an important idea in religious studies, because it really talks about a lot of how people feel these days or identify. Well, a lot of people identify that way. Can you talk about that distinction a little bit and what relevance it has to Burning Man?
That was actually the hardest chapter to write, because I sat down and had to write that definition of I tried to write the definition of spirituality and religion, you know, hundreds of times, and would crumple it up and throw it into the corner, and eventually wound up settling on a reportive definition of those terms. You know, this is what the people who go to Burning Man, the people that I survey, the people that I interviewed, this is how they describe spirituality and what they mean by religion. So in that context, people tend to associate religion with the institution and with the doctrine, and people tend to associate spirituality then with the experiential and the more mysterious elements, those parts that you can't put words around, right, the ineffable. So there's that distinction in the way that people talk about the event, but part of what was tricky about it is because I was writing for a room of mostly Christian theologians at the Graduate Theological Union in the first draft and, you know, trying to get the dissertation done. And they really questioned the extent to which people were trying to separate these two terms, as if religion and spirituality are something completely different. And part of that was their own, you know, unease and nervousness around the fact that they were still very attached to their religious institutions and trying to reinvent them from a progressive standpoint and not stripping out the spiritual from within that. And there's also a certain extent to which, you know, after working on this for all these years, I'm a little bit sick of that phrase myself. So now I understand some of what they were critiquing. It says something, but it doesn't say everything.
Yeah, well, I think that actually Burning Man is a great example of what is insufficient about that. I mean, in a way, the spiritual but not religious has done a great job of characterizing an extremely informal, in some cases quasi-secular, and in some cases very eclectic kind of New Age sort of spirituality. I mean, it covers a lot of different characteristics. It allows people, it has allowed a place for people to claim spiritual identity without having to deal with the issues of religion and all the problems people have with religion.
Right.
But it also doesn't serve, especially when you're talking about large, collective, ritualistic, ceremonial, collectively created in an artistic fashion, shared identities. I mean, at a certain point, you have to say, well, look, this looks like religion. It smells like religion. Yes, everybody in it says at best they're spiritual but not religious, but something else is going on that's beyond the kind of attenuated sort of Protestant into, you know, interior little monologues of, oh, I'm spiritual, but I don't really deal with any of that stuff. So something else is going on, and I think the Burning Man is a great place to look at the extreme tension in that in that phrase as well.
And this is probably why, you know, I mean, you may have noticed I don't use the word religion in the title of the book, right? I use the word ritual. And I think that although that word, too, has problems, it seemed to have a little bit less, you know, baggage around it in terms of some of the sort of, you know, knee-jerk rejection or assumptions about what this means. And I think that's part, then, of the beauty of Burning Man is that it uses ritual and allows people to create their own rituals as sort of a testament to the fact that that's still, you know, a pervasive meaning-making device. We have used ritual for thousands of years to tell ourselves who we are, to tell ourselves how we're connected
to something larger than ourselves and really act that out.
Actually, it's really funny that you used the word tell, because one of the things that I found in even researching the origins of the word ritual is it comes from rite, which actually means to like recount or number or like recite, and literally to count. And if you look at the word tell, when you tell a story, that's about recounting as well. Tell actually means to count, like as in numbers, like a teller in a bank.
Right.
So it's true, like a ritual is actually like you're re-going over, like reconstituting through your corporeal body
exactly
a story that is like usually always goes back to origin stories and source stories and where we come from. And that's why there's like the religious connection and the spiritual connection with rituals, is because it invariably goes back to the source of something through recounting.
Yeah, and exactly. It's an embodied expression of that. And a lot of times the stories that people are pulling on are not, you know, not an explicit story, but there are themes. You know, the man itself is something that, you know, is kind of an ancient symbol in terms of, you know, a humanoid figure on fire and just the power of fire itself. Those kinds of symbols and themes, you know, resonate with us because we've been telling ourselves these kinds of stories for a long, long time. But I wanted to make one other point, too, about religion. The simple reason why I wouldn't call Burning Man a religion, even though I will say that it smells like religion and that it operates like religion, really is, again, reportive. No one that I spoke to over 10 years of researching this thing would ever say that Burning Man is a religion, because they reject all of those things, you know, that we've been talking about, that people who... most of the people who go to Burning Man have problems with. But there are also things that religion does as when it owns up to the fact that it is religion, when it embraces an institution and a particular set of beliefs around that Burning Man doesn't do. And that's one of the big ones is a metaphysics. There's no particular narrative about the cosmos and our place in it that is spelled out here. You really kind of have to invent that for yourselves, or maybe better even bring your own, whatever tradition or worldview that you have coming into this, you know, defines that connection. And I think that that's something that Burning Man shies away from.
Lee, we're gonna take a short break here for some promos. You're listening to Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. We'll be right back.
Okay, great.
Listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Thoughtful, provocative, cutting edge. The Ask Dr. Eisenstein Show. Other doctors will scare you of the disease. Dr. Eisenstein will scare you of their treatment. Dr. Eisenstein is a practicing physician for almost 40 years and graduate of several prestigious medical schools. Since 1973, he has been the medical director of Home First Health Services in Chicago. The majority of the 23,000 families in this practice deliver their babies at home, breastfeed their children, choose not to vaccinate, and use natural treatments whenever possible.
Hi, I am Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. If you want to hear the other side of the story, tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for an hour of questions, answers, and lively discussion. Call me with your medical questions. I would love to talk with you.
Hello, this is Eric Ofner, your host of the best jazz show on the air on Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz. Every Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I play the best jazz ever recorded by Louis, Sidney, Bessie, Billy, and all the others. Remember, Progressive Radio Network, Eric's Sounds of Jazz, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hi, this is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food on the Progressive Radio Network. Please join me every Wednesday at 3 p.m. when we talk about the power of the fork, how our food choices affect our health, the environment, and the treatment of animals. Learn how a plant-based diet, of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds is not only delicious, but gentle on the planet.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to Expanding Minds. We're here talking with Lee Gilmore about Burning Man. I know, we love talking about Burning Man. and I've never even been. Lee, when we left, you were talking about something that's very interesting to me, just how you would say that Burning Man is not a religion because the people there say it's not. And that's very interesting to me because of its tight kind of relationship to paganism and hedonism that it has, like specifically just even with the Burning Man is kind of very paganistic, and with all the Wicker Man associations that Eric and I had talked with one of the founders of Burning Man, although he said he wasn't really a founder. It's funny, they'll never say, like even people that are in are like, I didn't really have anything to do with it. They kind of like purposefully abhor any kind of affiliation or connection, which is what you were saying, how they don't want that part of religion. But I don't know. I think that that's like part of paganism too, is that they would not say back in the day, I mean now I think you'd talk to a pagan and they're like, yeah, I'm a pagan. But back in the day, it was just about the event, that experience, that moment. And I think that's why they don't want that affiliation with religion, because it's not about something spread over time and space. It's about an experience of a moment that is contained in that is not repeatable, that is not retellable, that is not, you know, something that you can, like, redo again the same way exactly. But, I mean, to me, I think that's just kind of that misperception about what the word religion means, that it has...
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the scholars of religion generally cannot agree on a definition of religion, you know, and the best we've sort of been able to come up with is that the right answer is to agree to disagree, and also realizing the extent to which Western assumptions about what religion means and how you define that, so the things we've been talking about in terms of institution and doctrine, when you apply those to other contexts, It distorts what's actually going on there. So, for example, you're talking about ancient paganism. You're right. They wouldn't have necessarily used the word religion to describe that. It's simply, you know, maybe our word culture is a little bit better. It's simply what people do. It's how the world is. It's how you connect with each other and with something greater. So part of it then is to sort of realize that word, as we define it, you know, not only doesn't quite describe everything that goes on at Burning Man, it doesn't really describe the global phenomena of religion either. So I think that's something else that's important to remember there.
Well, Lee, one of the approaches you had with that was to allow people to speak for themselves, which seems a very good, both from a scholarly perspective and also just in terms of opening up the meaning-making process of what religion means, what spirituality means. But could you talk a little bit about some of the specific findings you had? You quoted something the other night, or mentioned something the other night at your book opening, where about the percentages of people who actually would declare that they had a religion or had a particular faith, and that was really interesting. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about what your ethnography revealed about what people bring to the event.
Yeah, great. So I, you know, did a survey, and let's see, I'm actually having to like bust open the book to look up the statistics myself. Slightly over 50% of everyone that I talked to or interviewed as a part of this used language like spiritual but not religious. And I know that part of the reason why they did that is a little bit in the way that I set up the question, but it was also something that, you know, people really seem to gravitate towards in terms of, if I asked, are you a spiritual or religious person, they'd say, oh, I'm spiritual but not religious. So that was a little over 50%. And then there was about 12% who specifically named a tradition when I asked them that question. And of that 12%, half of them, 6%, would say something like, I'm Jewish, I'm Christian. And there were more people who affiliated as Jews and as Christians, and that's a whole other conversation. And then again, another 6% said something like, I'm pagan, I'm Buddhist.
So I thought that that was really interesting, that in terms of those who did affiliate with a particular tradition, you know, it was sort of equally spread between traditional and non-traditional, at least in the Western context, religion. So that seemed to underscore, you know, part of the refusal and rejection of normative religion and the rest. Although one of the most fascinating interviews that I had was with an evangelical minister from Kansas City who came out a couple different times and handed out bottles of water to people and would sit you down in a long and really heartfelt and interesting conversation about the gospel of Jesus Christ. Eventually he would wind around to, you know, what he saw as the exclusivity of that message. But he was definitely inspired by the creativity of Burning Man. That aspect of it was not lost on him at all, and he really came to embrace that and see that that was something that he wanted to find a way to sort of tap into that creativity, you know, in his church ministry. So it's not even something that necessarily, you know, has no meaning to those who embrace conservative evangelical Christianity. And then the other piece of the data set there then is another 30-some-odd percent who didn't use words like religion or spiritual at all. Most of those were what I would just call sort of agnostic or ambivalent. They didn't really have a particular, you know, bone to pick one way or another about these ideas, and it was something that wasn't that central to their life. And then there was maybe about 10% that were really clearly, I'm an atheist. And even within that, there were a number of people who would say things like, well, I'm an atheist, I don't believe in God, and yet at Burning Man, I feel connected to a greater cosmos. I feel that it's a place to really kind of strip myself bare and look at my values and look at who I think I am and create myself anew. And although I don't want to necessarily put words into their mouth to say, well, see, that's a spiritual experience, I think there is a parallel. You know, I mean, maybe that first question we were talking about in terms of transformation, that I certainly can't ignore, that it fulfills a similar desire for people.
Well, that's one of the things that, like, I think is that when you get a bunch of spiritual people together in one place, is that then a religion, right? Because then it's about, well, maybe they don't want to adhere to some kind of thing, but it's true, like, when you get people that describe themselves as spiritual and they're all hanging out together doing spiritual stuff, that's when two or three people come together in my name. Like, that's whole part of that definition. But then you have to ask yourself, like, well, okay, so they all describe themselves as spiritual, but they all have, like, these different kind of agendas, and they're all under these different, like, all the different things you just described, right? Like, they're spiritual, but it's all these different aspects of it and very separate kind of interpretation, even like the agnostics and the atheists, like that's kind of a religion in itself. Like, I think atheism is kind of like a religion, you know, because they adhere to a certain doctrine and, you know, they have all these beliefs that are delineated and stuff like that. But so you get all these people with these very specific kind of sets of beliefs and things like that, but then they're coming together doing rituals together and doing things together. Like,
right.
You know,
and certainly in some of those contexts, it's people who, you know, one of the stories that I tell in the book is attending a Friday sundown Shabbos service on the playa within an open air sort of Gothic cathedral that a group built a few years ago. That was actually modeled on a place called Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, modeled to look like, you know, a medieval Gothic cathedral. And here they are at Burning Man, you know, singing songs from the synagogue. And so that was clearly, you know, owning a particular culture. You know, it was clearly we are Jews on the playa, and yet doing it within a space that, you know, referenced Christianity, had a rose window. So, you know, other examples of people, you know, teaching yoga classes, doing particular you know, meditation sessions within particular Buddhist traditions. You can go, you know, take classes. So it's not that people bring religion to Burning Man. They bring their traditions, and sometimes it really is, you know, as you say, people are doing these things quite explicitly, you know, within those structures. But again, I think ultimately what's more interesting about Burning Man is the way that it constantly ducks any sort of reified definition.
Mm.
That's on some level the purpose that it serves. And I hope I'm not sounding like I'm just afraid to call it religion and that it really is. I mean, I think that it's what's interesting about it is the extent to which it bleeds outside of those boundaries and it makes you think about what are those boundaries? How do we define those? What does that say about how we create culture, about how we are constantly constructing meaning?
Right. Yeah, it's the self-consciousness about construction that really stays with me, because one way of characterizing a certain kind of contemporary cynicism or postmodern cynicism is that you realize that everything is a construct, so you can't really say anything positive about anything at all, and this can be seen in a sort of negative light as, it's just all of these traditional sources of meaning are actually stories, they're made up, they're power games, and it kind of puts a brake on traditional ways that people create religious or spiritual meaning, or indeed meaning in general.
Right.
But there's a flip side to that, which is a kind of exuberant, playful, sometimes a little nihilistic maybe,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time extremely celebratory way of just embracing the constructed quality of social reality of our own minds. And one of the things about Burning Man is that it's constantly, constantly, constantly highlighting its constructedness.
Yeah.
So that structures, lighting, everything, you can see how it's made. You can see the man behind the curtain all the time. And at the same time, there's the magic happens. So it's like seeing the magic trick and seeing how the magic trick is done at the same time, almost as a question. So are you going to run with this, or are you just going to be like, aha, whatever, it's just a joke? And it's almost like it's constantly allowing both opportunities to resolve it as just a crazy, massive carnivalesque trick, or actually a very self-aware move to almost like another stage of celebration or enthusiasm, where you acknowledge the constructiveness, but you still move forward and you still embrace and you still have that kind of celebratory quality, even though you can see the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are all fantastic insights. It really is. So it's a symptom of, what we call the postmodern dilemma, right? That there is no singular narrative structure that everybody can agree to anymore. There is no one sacred canopy that defines everyone's experience. And so, exactly as you've said, part of what is magical about Burning Man is that it does show the man behind the curtain. And once you see the man behind the curtain at Burning Man, then you can step back and you can see that we are always the people behind the curtain all of the time anyway, and so that there is that sense of exuberance and playfulness that one hopes you bring back with you off the playa. I mean, that's sort of one of the big questions that people ask is this something that people only do on the playa for 1 week out of the year, or is it something that really has, a deeper import to people's lives? How do you take that back? And so, honestly, I think one of the ways that you can do that then is to see how, to participate in creating culture and creating meaning everywhere. You know what I'm saying?
What kind of evidence do you have for how the Burning Man experience changes people's lives off the playa in a way that would make it more in line with the effect of truly transformative religious or spiritual ritual?
Well, one of the things that I found in interviewing people that actually was kind of surprising was the extent to which people referenced the ethos. The Burning Man organizers themselves have put together sort of a list of 10 principles, right? 10 sort of ideas that they hope people embrace and sort of use to, navigate through their experience on the playa. So that's like things like, radical self-expression, radical self-reliance, participate, civic community, gift economy, these kinds of ideas that they use to define how they hope people will interact on the playa. And it does seem that people do on one level, people gravitate to Burning Man because they already embrace or are seeking those ideas. Oh, I want a place to participate in culture. I want a place to express myself creatively and artistically. I like, you know, the idea of a gift economy and leaving behind commerce, or rather leaving behind, you know, capitalism for a week. And then having experienced a space where you can do those, people want to keep doing that. People want to keep finding.
Well, and how about, like, did you personally have that experience when you went? Like, when you went, did you, is that part of what inspired this? Did you have, like, a kind of religious, spiritual breakthrough on the playa? Did you have that experience when you went?
I don't know if I did. I think maybe I'm one of those religion scholars that's much better at looking at religion from a little bit of a safe distance on some level than, you know, sort of exploding, you know, into the mystical consciousness myself. I haven't had that at Burning Man there. I'm owning up to that. But I have noticed that it has changed my life in other ways. And certainly when in looking over the interview data and I asked people how it changed their lives, they referenced those principles. They said, having seen these things in action, I found that there are ways that I wanted to act them out in the rest of my life. And I think that has been something that has changed me. So it's maybe less than, you know, a singular sort of whomp upside the head from the deities. It's been more, for me personally, about self-discovery, about community and about participating, so that for me writing this book is my way of participating. I mean, I've had some, you know, probably maybe the most powerful personal transformative experience I had was when I got knocked 1 year on my keister and found myself in the medical tent dehydrated after having, you know, been going for 8 or 9 years already at this point. I thought I knew what I was doing, and I found myself needing to be pumped full of saline and very dehydrated one night. And that just taught me something about myself and the way that I, respond to challenge, the way that I respond to crisis, the way that I look for support. So it was more about sort of, you know, gnosis in the practical world rather than the mystical world. I guess I've maybe had those experiences elsewhere. But I think, again, just to sort of, you know, tie it up with the ethos point, that's part of how people do find themselves transformed and then trying to transform the world or through those principles. So that part of the anxiety within mainstream religion is that if you take out the spiritual from the religious, well, what about the morality? Mm. How do people, you know how to behave and treat one another if you're completely, you know, stripping, all doctrinal morality away from it? I think that, again, part of what Burning Man shows is people, you know, want to have and articulate a system of being good to one another. And I think Burning Man has done that fairly well while still, again, always ducking it, as a doctrine.
Right. With all the contradictions implied, there is a kind of ethos, and you talk about some of those in the book, even mm-hmm. how they've manifested, you know, in the world, you know, like Burners Without Borders and
right.
the famous time when you know Katrina happened, as the event was going on,
right.
and there were tons of rumors, and people were growing apocalyptic, and then as more reality came through, people became motivated, and a number of people who were quite skilled went, and some less so, went directly from the event to Katrina in a way that was both very, very, you know, pragmatic and humanitarian, but also had, I think, a this is how you respond to apocalypse, or this is
yeah.
how you respond to, the breakdown in society, and it had a higher motivation to it as well.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually just saw they made a film about Burners Without Borders that I just saw the other night as part of the film festival called Burn on the Bayou, and one of the points that they made in interviewing those people who went directly from Burning Man to the Gulf Coast to try and find a way to be of service right after Hurricane Katrina was that experience transform them as well, that, you know, in terms of finding a way to really be engaged so that maybe part of what Burning Man brings people is a transformative experience. I mean, it can be, you know, that moment of mystery and enlightenment, but I think it also can be really being engaged and embodied in the world. How do you help people in need, you know, so that it is both pragmatic and also shows you something about yourself and your own human nature in a way that that's visceral. So this is what I heard, you know, that some of the interviewees on that film talking about the other night.
It's also interesting to reflect on what you said about how the book was also part of your way expressing the spirituality of Burning Man, because in many ways Burning Man is very resistant to discourse. That's part of one way of saying what we've been saying the whole show, is that
right. It
pulls the rug out from under anything that you might say about it. So it's actually very hard as somebody who is, to some degree identified with the event, and I include myself as well, who's also wants to, you know, not put words in other people's mouth and be true to the multiplicity of the event as well, but still having to say something. And I know for me, that was a very transformative moment for me as well, when I wrote about Burning Man the second year I went to it, and then after that I consciously chose not to write about it anymore. In fact, I didn't even find out who people were. I just would go out there and just experience. I mean, I was really kind of a naive, not naive in terms of food and water, but just I didn't even know who the artists were. I didn't know anything about the brass. I didn't even get into the culture. I just would go and with my friends and we just explore. And then there was a point where that was starting to fade for me. Like I was becoming a jaded, crusty one, and which is a whole phenomenon to itself, the jaded burner. And so my way of responding to it was to begin discourse again. And so I started to talk on the playa. I talked about spirituality on the playa. So I would talk about the playa on the playa. And because you and I are articulate and we create frameworks for people that even if they feel a little bit threatened by them in some ways, in other ways it allows people to go, yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's what it is like. Or even more, now I see something that I didn't see before. And people would come up to me and say, oh my God, I saw your talk and I had the whole this experience and now I understood some other aspect of it. So it's actually even interesting how it, you know, unlike most religions, it puts us talkers at a lower point in a way, but it makes it even more meaningful to really try to say something about this event, and it's hard. And so, you know, I congratulate you on that.
Well, thank you. You know, and it's funny, I kind of wish I'm a little bit jealous, because I don't know if I ever really had that sort of naive moment of just being at Burning Man, because I was in grad school when I started going, and I just sort of instantly, maybe that's just the way my brain works, I started, you know, writing anthropology in my head. And then over the years, I started inviting, I would meet other scholars who were interested at Burning Man or just attending, and I started inviting them to camp with me and inviting them, you know, I'd have a little cocktail party. And so for a few years, our camp became kind of intellectual discourse camp, so that I would spend my week there with other people talking about what it means and asking those questions, you know, and critiquing, while at the same time being in the middle of a bunch of crusty, jaded old burners. So that part of my own personal experience then has really been about discourse, you know, not one singular definition, but about the multiplicity of discourses and how different people do make meaning there. So, you know, again, this has really been, you know, one of the things I have to say before we run out of time is that this is my story and my lens, and I know that there are a thousand other ways to approach this and a lot of things and stories that did get left out, but that's how people engage at Burning Man, I think, is in their own way. And so this is my strange little way of doing that is to write a book about it.
But I also want to just also say that while it is your perspective and your story involved trying to wrestle some real data and real, like, concrete observational material out of what is a very crazy beast, a very difficult thing to filter and track and concretize. And so that's another way in which it's, again, it's not just the topic of religion, but just your ability to have collected a lot of information. And you spend all that time with your grad student brain, you know, taking the right kind of notes and stuff. So it is your perspective, but it's also a very appropriate and in some ways objective one, so to use a little dodgy term. But we have to roll now. So we've been talking to Lee Gilmore. Her book is called Theater in a Crowded Fire, Ritual and Spirituality at Burning Man. Do you have a website or something you can tell folks about?
I don't have a particular website. I have a Facebook page. If you Google, you know, Theater Crowded Fire, you'll also find the University of California Press has a page about it. There's an Amazon page. I'm one of those Facebook nerds, so if you want to look me up there, that's probably the best way to make touch with me personally. So.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Expanding Mind. From me and Maja, keep your minds open.
Thank you.